From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Nearly $100 million. That's how much the city of Sacramento has issued in fines against homeowners for illegal cannabis grows. Nearly $100 million in just the past 2 years. Often, the illegal growing was being done by tenants. So dozens of homeowners are now trying to challenge the fines legally, and attorneys are saying in some cases the process is a kangaroo court. Cap Radio state government reporter Scott Rodd has been following the story. Hi, Scott.
Thanks
for joining us.
Thank you.
This is complicated. Will you try to lay it out in broad lines?
Sure. So I'll start with what everyone agrees on in this story, and that's that there is a problem with illegal marijuana growing in Sacramento and in a lot of cities in California. Everyone agrees that these houses are being operated in Sacramento, and it's not just a couple dozen plants that are being grown. Often it's hundreds of plants, sometimes more than 1,000 plants that are being grown. And so to address this problem back in 2017, the city passed an ordinance that said if you grow more than 6 plants in your home, you are going to be fined $500 per plant. And as you can imagine, that adds up very quickly. So these fines that property owners are getting are, you know, typically $200,000, $300,000, sometimes $500,000. I've seen some in excess of $1 million.
For one property?
For one property, yes. So one fine for one property, hundreds of thousands of dollars in a couple occasions I've seen, more than $1 million. And as you mentioned, the city has issued close to $100 million in these fines. However, that's not the same as having collected $100 million. So far, they've only collected about $5.5 million.
Why?
Well, as you alluded to in the intro, there are a lot of people who are challenging these penalties. And as you said, there are dozens of people who have taken the city to court, but there are hundreds of property owners who have challenged the penalties through the city's appeal process. And, you know, they're saying essentially that these fines are excessive. These fines are not proportionate to, you know, what a property owner is responsible for. And largely, the people who are challenging them are rental property owners who say, hey, my tenant grew this cannabis. You know, he was the one who kind of went rogue, and I wasn't responsible for this. And here we have a property owner who owned a rental property in Sacramento named Zuhu Wang. And here was his response to the fines that he received.
I'm a victim here. Me and homeowners to whom this has happened, you know, we are victims and we are the ones who are being punished here. The ones who should be punished are the people who break the law, who grow the marijuana. And if anything, I wish the government would increase the penalty for those people.
And so I spoke to Wang through a Mandarin interpreter a couple months ago, and he was alluding to there his tenant receiving very little penalty. And that's a common reoccurrence in these cases. The property owner, the rental property owner, will receive the fine. However, the tenant who grew the pot, they'll sometimes walk away with no penalty, or if they do receive a penalty, it's typically community service and maybe a couple years probation.
So you're saying there's no mechanism for the city to directly fine the tenant, those responsible for the grow, nor is there a mechanism for the homeowner who might get the fine to pass it back then to the tenant?
I mean, no mechanism that I've seen. I actually sent in one of my many records requests to the cities was asking, hey, can I see examples of fines that were given to tenants but as opposed to homeowners? And the city got back and said, we don't have any examples of that. These administrative penalties only go to homeowners. The city attorney's office, when I interviewed them, said that they did go after some tenants, but I didn't see that in terms of the penalties. And attorneys for property owners that I'm speaking to, they essentially said that, you know, this is a mechanism for the city to generate money. And here's Malcolm Siegel, a longtime attorney in Sacramento who has had several of these property owners.
They go after the homeowners, one, as a revenue tool, and second, because the homeowner is an easy target of opportunity.
And Siegel's argument there is essentially, you know, even if the homeowner didn't have any awareness or knowledge of it, they're the ones whose name is on the deed.
They own the property.
They own the property. They mm-hmm. have equity in the property. The property could be sold. Many of these properties are being sold after the penalties are received. And he's arguing, and many other attorneys that I've spoken to have argued, this is essentially just a cash grab. That's the phrase that a lot of them have used.
So what does the city say about this? And we're talking about this 2-year time frame, which is pretty recent. And maybe it's the first time a homeowner has experienced the situation and a rental agreement might not have changed. The tenants might not have changed. What's the city saying in its behalf?
So the city is saying that these illegal marijuana grows bring dangerous elements to neighborhoods. So not only the houses themselves become dangerous to inhabit or to be around, often there are concerns about lots of black mold, concerns about the electrical panels in these houses being modified, which create fire hazards. They also say that these grows have increased criminal activity, sometimes violent criminal activity in these neighborhoods. So they've said, this is a high priority. City Attorney Susanna Alcala Wood speaking just to that criminal element that's associated with these grows.
It's creating a lot of havoc in the neighborhoods in which these activities pop up, creating an increased danger because of the organized crime activity and the criminal activity that surrounds these illegal cannabis houses. And so we are going to do everything in our power to protect our neighbors.
And so I will say this, from statistics that I've seen or from descriptions from the city and from city police, it does appear that there are, increased criminal activity associated with these grows. The organized crime element of it, that's a little more squishy. And I guess not to get too deep into the weeds, there have been a couple pretty big busts in Sacramento that illustrated ties between these houses and organized crime. But those were largely carried out by the federal government. An important part of this story is that these penalties that property owners are receiving are civil penalties. These are not criminal penalties. Mm. And so if there is an underlying criminal, organized criminal element to this, from what I've seen, that's not being addressed. So that's often something that gets talked about with these grow houses with the city. But it's important to keep in mind that these are civil penalties that the city is handing out.
So this enforcement approach is to go at public safety. It's to go at the illegal grows. But it sounds like it's also a prompt to homeowners that the city is really trying to get some movement by property owners.
And yeah, I mean, essentially you have like the hammer has to come down somewhere, right? And I think instead of trying to play, to extend the metaphor a little bit, trying to play whack-a-mole with all these tenants, they said, well, we know the homeowners, they're on the deed. And we know that we can, essentially say, the city had a choice. Ultimately, where does the buck stop? And for the city, they decided that the buck stops with the property owner, and they should be aware of what's happening in their homes, even if they're renting it out, even if a tenant is inhabiting that. And Councilman Eric Guerra spoke to this, and he his district has had a lot of problems with illegal marijuana grows, and this is how he justified why they go after property owners.
There's a responsibility that landlords have. And if they didn't know that somebody was manipulating the infrastructure of the house, the electrical, the water, they're obviously not paying attention to what's happening with their property.
I'm talking with Cap Radio Scott Rodd, and that was a comment from Sacramento City Council Member Eric Guerra. How does the city begin an investigation? How are these homes being identified?
So an investigation can start in a couple different ways. Sometimes it's a tip from a neighbor. Sometimes if police are looking into something else related to perhaps some sort of complaint, a nuisance, and then they sort of stumble on what appears to perhaps be an illegal grow. But largely, from what I'm seeing, these investigations start with data from SMUD. It starts with electrical data from them that shows high electrical usage at these houses. And that sort of is the key indicator for police to then launch an investigation. And so what I've seen from...
Can I pause you a minute?
Sure.
Tell me about the interface there. between SMUD and law enforcement?
Sure. So from what I've seen in reviewing hearing transcripts, search warrant affidavits, police are testifying or police are saying that they receive lists of addresses from the Sacramento Municipal Utility District that show high electricity usage. So essentially these lists of addresses that say, hey, there's something potentially suspicious going on here. And then police review those and they pick one out and then they start to investigate. So it starts, again, from what I can see from testimony and from search warrant affidavits, it starts with these lists that are being sent from SMUD to the police department.
Are attorneys involved in questioning whether that exchange of information is legal and appropriate?
That has been a big question for attorneys that are representing property owners. They're saying, you know, hey, what's the legality here? How appropriate is this? Is this right? Should this be how investigations are starting? So that is a big question that attorneys are asking.
So we just have a few seconds left, but I do want to talk about the status of court cases, and one's coming up in January, correct?
Yeah. So there have been dozens of legal actions filed by property owners against the city saying, hey, my penalty is not appropriate, and asking a judge to take a look at it. There's only been one so far that's been ruled on the merits, which is essentially when a judge weighs in, and that judge wiped the penalty clean. She said this violated due process. There are a number of problems with this. But there is also a separate lawsuit that's challenging the entire enforcement program, its constitutionality, excessive fines, due process issues, also an element or an allegation of discrimination. The lawsuit claims that the vast majority of these property owners are Asian American. And so the lawsuit is also alleging that there is a discriminatory intent, perhaps, to these penalties. And yes, the first hearing for that lawsuit will be coming up in January.
There is much more reporting on this topic, additional stories. I'm going to point everybody to capradio.org, but I think this was an important conversation for us. Thanks for making time to be here today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
That's Cap Radio State Government reporter Scott Rodd. The rest of his reporting is at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.
This is Cap Radio, 90.9 Sacramento and 91.3 Stockton Modesto, your NPR station. We get support from Sactown Magazine, whose new issue features a profile of fish farmer Michael Passmore, a new play about serial killer Doretha Puente, and a cover story on great places to eat, drink, and play. Sactown Magazine, on newsstands now. And from Suncrest Bank, a local bank in Sacramento, Lodi, and Yuba City, committed to the everyday success and long-term prosperity of the people and businesses they serve. Learn how banking local can be a rewarding experience at suncrestbank.com.
This is Paul DiStefano in Sacramento. I listen to 90.9 and 88.9 because it's the greatest thing out there. There is nothing that makes my day kick-started any better than those stations. Thank you and keep it up.
We love to hear how we keep you all connected. Hi there. Thanks for listening this morning. My name's Sally Schilling. I'm the podcast director here at Capital Public Radio. I'm here with Chris Bruno, director of marketing for Cap Radio. We just want to take a minute right now to explain why it's the perfect time for you to become a member.
Yeah, it's the art of conversation, and it's alive and well on Cap Radio. Talk shows that are challenging, civil, intelligent, and down-to-earth all at once. Hundreds of listeners have made that the reality. Join them now with a monthly contribution.
We know you've been thinking about it, too. And on this day of giving, it's the perfect time to call, donate online. Select that food bank option that we're having this time. That's where we'll give a portion of your gift toward buying meals at a food bank determined by your zip code. So give now at capradio.org or call 1-800-800-5867. Again, that number, in case you don't know it by heart yet like we do, is 1-800-800-5867.
It only takes a few minutes to make a big difference. Call now and we'll walk you through the steps or set yourself up online at capradio.org. Want to ask a few questions while you donate? Just call 1-800-800-5867. 1-800-800-5867. 5867.
And take part in today's international campaign. You've heard about Giving Tuesday. That's that global movement that inspires and empowers individuals to make a lasting impact in their communities through charitable donations. And we know at this time of year, you're thankful for family, friends, and that community you have. And we know that we are also a part of your community. Show us right now that you value that. Donate to Cap Radio today. You can call 1-800-800-5867 or go to capradio.org.
Think about how many times this year you've relied on NPR and Cap Radio to tell you what's going on and to help explain why. That's powerful public radio. And where do you get the power? Listener donations. Make the choice now to contribute and support us today on Giving Tuesday.
We like to say in journalism, sometimes, you know, we get into the nuances of things, especially in NPR's coverage and our local coverage here at Cap Radio, and make our listeners sometimes confused at a higher level. We don't shy away from the complications of life and news. So your investment in fact-based journalism is going to help us continue to keep you informed and give you that unbiased reporting. Where else can you get that?
Your contribution right now helps pay for high-quality, dependable coverage to help make decisions in the voting booth and beyond. Don't wait any longer. Please donate now. You can donate at capradio.org or by calling 1-800-800-5867. Again, that's 1-800-800-5867.
And, you know, you've been listening for a while, and maybe you've never donated. This is the perfect time. It's Giving Tuesday. It's that time of year to give thanks, reflect on all those things that make your life whole and make you feel connected. So call us again, 1-800-800-5867, and thank you so much.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. In the past week, we've gone from, let's track this, Thanksgiving to Black Friday to Small Business Saturday, then Cyber Monday. And now today, as you're hearing, it's Giving Tuesday. How do we keep up with it all? And how do you shop online safely with peace of mind and figure out whether what seems to be a genuine deal is in fact a genuine deal? Well, I have a guest here who can help. She is Alma Galvin, Marketing and Communications Manager from the Better Business Bureau Sacramento office. Hi, Alma.
Hello, good morning.
And your shopping's done, right?
Yes, thank God.
How was Black Friday? What are the numbers saying?
So Black Friday and Cyber Monday tend to be the largest shopping days on a national level. This year, $7 billion were spent in one day on Black Friday. And out of those $7 billion, $2.4 billion were on our mobile devices. So that means while some of us were having Thanksgiving dinner, some of us were shopping, or we've actually noticed a trend where they're before, like they start at 12, or it's after dinner, or, you know, there's those people that have dinner and then go shopping. It's trends that change year by year. As you remember before, I would say about 10 years ago, the things that we're seeing now, we're definitely not seeing 10 years ago. And I've been with the Better Business Bureau long enough to see the trends change every year.
We have hit a tipping point, according to reports, that more online shopping is being done now than in retail stores, and more smartphone shopping is being done than on a laptop or a tablet.
Exactly. I mean, it's at our fingertips. If we're cooking dinner, we can, you know, shop at the same time. If we're watching, you know, something on TV, you can still do the same thing. It's just, it's more accessible. It's faster. You don't have to leave your house. You don't have to wait in line. And, you know, it's at the comfort of your own home and no one is pushing you around. And, you know, for example, one of the things that it is super accessible, but with that also comes risks. And, you know, 3 years ago, I remember when Cyber Monday kind of took a hit, with not everyone going shopping on Thursdays anymore. They wait for that Monday. And even with Small Business Saturday has trends where you go in the store, but now most of them offer, you know, discount codes also on Saturday as well as on Monday.
Is your office hearing more from people about how do I do this safely? How do I shop safely? Or the actual reporting of a breach or a scam or a problem?
I would say it's probably about 50-50. We start our cybersecurity awareness in October. October is National Cybersecurity Month, and we take it into November and December. Reason for that is because we understand that people are going to be shopping early. And cybersecurity doesn't just need to happen within these holidays. It needs to happen year round. But unfortunately, there are those that call us when it's too late or report scams that it's too late, that if they literally would have Googled or searched our information or looked at our holiday tip guidelines, they could have definitely avoided the scam if they would have taken the time to read some of the possible scams that can happen during this holiday season.
So let's begin with that online shopping. You're on your smartphone. Mm-hmm. What are the precautions right off the bat?
First and foremost, if you're on social media, let's give or take Facebook or Instagram, and you click on something, keep in mind that most of the time it does take you to an external website. Once you go away from Instagram or Facebook, you're literally responsible for whatever happens to you during those purchases. A lot of times those links have malware. Other times they're not real links, and you might be thinking you're shopping for something when in reality they just want to track your cookies or track exactly what you're buying so that they can retarget. It's called a retargeting marketing strategy where they know what you're looking for and then it pops up again. And it's just you're more susceptible to that as well. The next thing is, you know, a lot of times no one verifies information where you're at. They don't verify the website. They don't verify phone numbers. They don't verify addresses. And one of the simplest tips I could give you is if you go to any website, on the top left-hand corner, you always see HTTP and then there's an S. That S means security or secure. And there's always going to be a little lock next to it before the H. That means that that website is secure and you can, you know, have the tranquility of knowing that if you read the privacy policy, they're going to tell you exactly what they're going to do with your information. A lot of these websites that are fake, they, you know, pop up, they don't have that. And that's the most simplest tool I can give that I would want you guys all to take away today is just to be cautious of where you're at. It's very easy to get into these websites and purchase something and not realize that you then become a victim of identity theft.
So we're on the phone, we're shopping, mm-hmm. You've given us the warnings, we've made our purchase, and it comes time to buy and to put in the credit card information.
Yes.
What do we need to know at that point?
We've been telling consumers to always use a credit card instead of an ATM, or you could always buy a Visa gift card. The reason for that is because here's the simplest way to basically answer that. Your credit card is not attached to your bank account. Your ATM is. Hackers are extremely intelligent. They can literally trace anything that you do if they hack into your Wi-Fi, and they can see your banking information. So that if you're paying with your credit card, you're not accessing your banking information as opposed to your ATM. When you use a gift card, there's nothing attached to it, just the money that you've put in there. So it's the easiest and safest form. The only thing is that you can't dispute charges most of the time if you bought something and it wasn't from a real website. So the easiest and safest way would probably be to use your credit card, because then you can dispute it with your credit card company. Or, of course, you could always file a complaint with your local Better Business Bureau and dispute those charges with the company as well.
I'm thinking that many bank cards are combination credit card and debit. So as long as it's got that debit piece, that's not the card you want to use.
No. Again, it's attached to your bank account.
So now you've made a purchase safely, and the package is going to arrive at your house.
Yes.
Now what to be aware of?
So we obviously, I'm sure we watch the news. We hear it everywhere. There's people stealing packages off of your porch. But there's a lot. It's a whole other world. This is, again, something that's new and trending is you get emails. And again, these emails can be, oh, you delivered a product, click here. And those are phishing emails. Those phishing emails a lot of times just want to, again, trap malware in your computer or get more information from you. Other times there's a delivery notice on your door that says, oh, we missed you. Most of the times they want you to call and verify the credit card payment, or they want you to call and verify your name and your address. Again, you're just giving them free information to be a victim of identity theft and for them to then go and buy more stuff under your name.
So don't do the follow-up surveys or the giving the information by phone.
Unless you know it's the actual company. But keep in mind, whenever you buy a product, they're not going to verify payment. The only thing they're going to verify is your address and the tracking number that you should have received via email.
You're listening to Alma Galvin. She is Marketing and Communications Manager with the Better Business Bureau Sacramento. There's much more helpful information on, as she mentioned, their website. So we have posted a link. More than 80 fake companies that you're aware of operating in the greater Sacramento area alone?
Yes.
All right, say more about that.
So we have what I like to call them pop-up companies, where they're fly-by-nights, where they come up and they're trending based on the holidays. You see them on Mother's Day. You see them on 4th of July.
An online pop-up company
only.
With
yep.
a deal.
Yes. So here in Sacramento, we have a lot. And they're companies that, you know, might be in Folsom, might be in Citrus Heights. And they're offering products that are geared, and we've noticed it's geared towards women. So they're household items, kids' clothing, women's clothing, some electronics, but not too much, that are extremely, extremely cheap. And
is it going to look like a normal shopping site?
It's very nice, actually. But again, you don't verify the phone number. We verified the address. And these are just tips that I've taken in because, you know, I do this. So I go on there. And the websites, a lot of times, if you look at whois.com, which is a tool that we could use to see where the websites are registered. Again, it's whois.com.
whois.com.
And mm-hmm. you can see most of these are from Panama. The phone numbers are basically, there's no dial tone to them. The emails are not, you know, at the company name. It's another weird email. And then the addresses a lot of times are either a P.O. box or it's a post box for UPS or an apartment address.
So you're with the Better Business Bureau. You're going to have a sense about
a sense
mm-hmm. of skepticism mm-hmm. anyway. What's somebody sitting at home seeing this pop up on their computer to use mm-hmm. as a tool to screen it out or to avoid it?
For example, the AirPods right now are one of the hottest items for anyone on their
holiday list. Yeah.
And they're not going to be $29.99, right? They're $150 or more. I think the lowest we saw it this past week was $149. So if you're there on sale for $29.99, that is a huge red flag. We saw this again over the summer with Ray-Bans, where they were on sale for $19 at this website here locally as well. And it's just a little bit for us to know that these glasses or these electronics are not going to be $29. iPads are not going to be $50. And it's just us knowing that it's not that cheap. And most of the time when we go and we buy clothing, there's a website where it's, you know, their dresses. Even though the address might say Sacramento, it might say Citrus Heights, or it might say Roseville, based on the demographic where we're in, most of the times are in China, and you're not going to get your product in time, and sometimes you don't even get it. So it's just looking at the website and kind of, again, that HTTPS is a huge tool that we could all use. Verify the phone numbers, verify the emails, verify the addresses, and then just take your time and shop around and kind of get an idea to where you might see a product.
Are you saying it's okay to call the number that you might see on the website, that you don't somehow get yourself ensnared by making the phone call?
Most of those phone numbers are not real. That's the thing. They don't have a dial tone. If they do, how they answer it is very important. They should say the company name. They shouldn't answer hello. The professionalism, which we're used to as customer service, should be there.
I want to add that sometimes voicemails are left prompting mm-hmm. you to call back mm-hmm. with information or verification. I received one saying my Apple account had been compromised. So I called Apple tech uh-huh. support and I said, could there be a problem? She said, ma'am, that's a scam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only thing to do maybe is go to the source or go to the Better Business Bureau.
Yes, that happened to me too. And a lot of times they say, oh, it's been compromised. Can you go online or can you change your password? It's $199. Well, Apple IDs are not you know, they don't charge for them. The one thing that we did is if you Google that phone number that probably called you, there's a report already that has that it's being scammed. And then in our scam tracker, which is a super cool tool that we have, you could actually verify a scam by putting in keywords.
And that's on the website.
It's on our website. It's bbb.org/scam tracker. Again, bbb.org/scam tracker. So if you put that phone number, you can see how many people have reported it on a national level. If you put Apple ID, you see how many people have reported scams with Apple ID. And then sometimes you can see if they've compromised them with money. You can see how much money people are losing. The biggest one that we've seen people lose a lot of money in are investment scams. And those have no trend. It just happens year round. And we're talking about people's trusts, you know, within millions of dollars sometimes as well.
We posted a link also with an article from Consumer Reports magazine reminding you to update your passwords,
yes,
not to jump on free Wi-Fi, mm-hmm, use a strong password, back up your devices. This is Giving Tuesday, so I want to close quickly with a bit of advice about choosing an appropriate nonprofit group and, mm-hmm, being able to donate to something that is credible with integrity.
Exactly.
In full disclosure, Cap Radio is part of the realm of those participating in Giving Tuesday. We hope you feel the integrity about our organization. But what's the beware message?
The beware are the ones that have GoFundMe accounts. A lot of times is what we've seen that have grammatical errors, not only on GoFundMe accounts, but on their website. And it's not that we're saying GoFundMe is a bad company. It's just people utilize it in a negative way. So you want to make sure that the images on any of these websites are on crowdfunding or not distorted. Check for grammatical errors. Google the pictures is the easiest way to find out if these companies are real. We actually do have a part of the Better Business Bureau that's completely geared towards charities. It's called give.org. And give.org, it works on a national level. And we actually rate charities. So if you want to donate money to, let's say, such and such charity, you can search it on there and you can see the rating that they have, if they met the standards. And those standards go from the financial information that they might have to how they're using the money that they're getting donated, which is very important. If it's going to salaries, programs, or anything like that, it's all on give.org.
All right, Alma, lots of great advice.
Yes.
I'm going to point people to bbb.org and give.org,
yes,
and all the information on our website. Thank you.
Thank
Happy
you
holidays.
So much. Likewise, thank you.
I hope that was great help to you. That was Alma Galvin from the Better Business Bureau Sacramento. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.
This is Cap Radio 90.9 Sacramento, streaming at capradio.org. We get support from the Mondavi Center UC Davis, presenting Danu, an Emerald Isle Christmas, and Pink Martini with China Forbes. Details and tickets at mondaviarts.org. And from Ansel Park Senior Living, a brand new modern and unique retirement community in Rockland, offering independent living, assisted living, and memory care. Tour information at anselparklife.com.
Hi, my name is Karen O'Brien from Loomis. I listen to Cap Radio because I am so much more informed as a result of listening to it. Cap Radio has made me a better person. That's it in a nutshell. I am so glad that you're around.
Thanks for listening to Insight this morning. There's more coming right back up. I'm Sally Schilling, podcast director here at Capital Public Radio, here with Chris Bruno, director of marketing. And we're asking you to donate to Cap Radio right now. At last check, we were looking to hear from you. That's right, you. So call us right now. We know you've been thinking about this. And yep, not another second to waste. You've been thinking about it. Do it right now.
So today is Giving Tuesday, and maybe you've already made a donation to your kid's school or a local charity. You may have even done that via Facebook. Well, you can go and visit Capital Public Radio on Facebook right now and donate through the system.
You might be looking at it right now at work when,
yeah,
you shouldn't be.
Or at home. You never know. You could even be on your mobile device. It's that easy. You can also go on a mobile device to capradio.org and donate as well.
Stand for fact-based reporting, unbiased journalism, and the truth. As listener-supported public radio, Cap Radio is one of those things in your life that's here because of people like you. Your community has kept it going for you, and now is the time for you to step up and protect something that you love. Get involved right now and make an online donation at capradio.org or call the number 1-800-800-5867.
1-800-800-5867. So today, you can stretch your generosity even further and choose the food bank option with your donation to Cap Radio. A portion of your gift will benefit a food bank in an area determined by your zip code. The more you give, the more meals we can provide. And that's a great way to give on Giving Tuesday. You can donate now at capradio.org or at 1-800-800-5867.
Tomorrow's impeachment hearing means that we're going to put our fund drive on hold because part of our public service mission here is to make sure that you stay informed. It's important that you get that information from us when you need it, even in the midst of our fund drive. But again, we can't do this without your support. And if you really support the idea that we're going to bring you that news and information no matter what, donate. Tomorrow's coverage from NPR is super important. But again, we cannot do it without your support.
That's so true. And I know how important it is, but your support is equally important. Each contribution gets us one step closer to reach this hour's goal. That's important because the fund drive is ending next Tuesday. If we haven't heard from you yet, please reach out to us today with your contribution.
Cap Radio is that place where you can find imagination, inspiration, and reasonable conversation. And it stays that way because listeners like you donate. Join that group of people and keep that this station providing that news, that in-depth interview that just you just happened to hear when you hopped in the car and you're like, man, this is I was meant to hear this right now. We're bringing that to the Central Valley, to Tahoe, to Vacaville, to your town. Let us hear from your town right now.
That's so right, Sally. And donating now only takes a few minutes and adds hours of Cap Radio to the air. Please help by donating now. Call 1-800-800-5867. 1-800-800-5867. If the phone lines are busy, you can go to our website at capradio.org and donate now. If you're on Facebook, you can go to Capital Public Radio and donate as well. Please do that now. It's all in your hands. Thank you so much for your support today. It is so appreciated and is so important to what we do. We really, really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
This is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Persimmons are ripening across the region now. It's a sure sign of December. And with most of the leaves off the trees, you can see the fruit hanging like beautiful bright orange ornaments. Persimmons are rich in vitamins. You have to eat them, though, and use them at just the right ripening stage. And this is something we had to learn in our family with two big trees on the property. So let's go back to a conversation I had in 2012. With Jean Brine. Jean wrote a cookbook featuring more than 1,000 persimmon recipes. It's titled Perfectly Persimmon, and she explained two different kinds that grow here.
One of them is the hachia, which you brought from your two trees, and the hachia persimmon must be very ripe, very soft, before you can use it or eat it or bake or anything with it, because it is an astringent fruit. And you will never forget it if you eat it when it isn't ready.
That's true. If you don't know what astringent means, just try biting into one that's not
Your
ripe.
Mouth will never be the same again.
Yeah.
And the second type that we have in this part of the country is the Fuyu persimmon. And there are many, many hundreds and hundreds of varieties of Fuyu. Fuyu is just a generic name like Kleenex. And the Fuyu looks like a tomato. Some are small, depending on the tree, and some are larger. And some people like to eat them when they're ripe with the skin, and some people peel the skin off. And you eat it just like you do an apple. And you can also let the Fuyu get ripe and osterize it and puree it and freeze it. So you can have them all year long. And if you put them in one cup, or 2-cup measurements, because all of the recipes seem to call for that type of measurement. And so you may as well be ready. So when you freeze them, keep them in those quantities.
The persimmon is such an unusual fruit, isn't it? It's beautiful, but I'm amazed by how many people, including our own producer, who hadn't really understood or known what a persimmon was.
And because they're so expensive when you buy them in the store, not too many people will buy them at the store. They will get an abundance of them on their own trees or neighbors' trees, and they are given to them by people because a good tree will have 50 to 100 pounds of persimmons. Well, that's a lot of persimmons, and what do I do with all of them?
Uh-huh.
So I will either give them away or wait until they're ripe, freeze them, and I can have them all year round if I have them in the freezer at these different 1-cup or 2-cup measurements.
Yeah, I was so excited about your cookbook because we, as you mentioned, we have these trees and then there's all this fruit, and it's foreign to me, having grown up in the Midwest and the East. I wasn't around them before. But how did you ever decide that this was going to be your life mission, Jean? You've spent
half
your life.
Well, I never planned it that way. But when we moved here from North Dakota, we didn't have persimmon trees there. And so I've never seen one, never heard of them. And so when we were my parents had 3-room and board houses for girls on Capitol Avenue. And in the backyard were these huge trees, and it was the time of the year when persimmons were going to become available. And I thought, what is that beautiful fruit? Because I like fruit anyway. And so I asked friends, what is it and what do you do with it? Well, they explained to me and they said, if you don't want them, we'd be happy to take them from you. And so then I started looking into recipes. Very, very few cookbooks carry persimmon recipes.
Right.
And so I started gathering them about 45 years ago. Every time I'd see anything that said persimmon, a recipe or information about them, I kept a copy. And then when we got computers, I put it into the computer and had it readily available. And so then I thought, this is really an interesting fruit. I would like to know more about it. And so I gathered recipes. And I thought, well, now I've got to do something with these recipes. So I thought I will put it together in a cookbook.
So this persimmon work has just been a hobby, hasn't it?
It's just been a hobby. And finally, after I retired, I thought, now is the time to really seriously see if I can put it together in all this information together into a cookbook. And that's what happened. So I finally did it.
I'm speaking with Jean Brine. She is the author of Perfectly Persimmon. And you've learned a lot of history. So the history of persimmons goes back to where, Jean?
It was first discovered in 1607 by Captain John Smith when he was there with the Indians. And so the Indians, when he saw the fruit, he thought, what is this and what do I do with it? So the Indians taught our ancestors how to use persimmons and what you can do with them, because you need to know the right way to use them or it just doesn't work.
In your book, there's everything from desserts, which you would expect, the cakes and cookies, to persimmons in vegetable dishes, often with sweet potatoes.
Even in meat dishes.
Meat dishes, often with pork and sausage.
Right.
But not only that. You have a persimmon beer in there,
right,
and then the wine. Have you tried both of those?
I haven't tried those, but the persimmon liqueurs I did, and I have a few favorite recipes that I have discovered through the years.
Oh, yeah?
Lemon glazed persimmon bars.
Sounds good.
And
great.
A persimmon gumdrop fruitcake, which if people do not like fruitcake, I think they like this one. And there's a very simple way of using a hachia persimmon when it's totally ripe, is you can put it in a bowl and you can add any of your favorite liqueur to it. And if you wish to have ice cream and pour the liqueur over the ice cream, that's a very delicate, quick dessert that you can serve when you're having company.
There's an old folktale about a persimmon that I think I saw in your book. Is it from Missouri?
Right.
What's the story?
this folktale from Missouri. It's about the seed of the persimmon. And the seed contains a small white embryo. And when you break it in half, what they are saying is if it looks like a spoon, they will have a lot of snow that year. And if it looks like a fork, they'll have a moderate amount of snow. And if it looks like a knife, they'll have very little or no snow at all. So this is a folk tale, and I don't know if it's true. I haven't spoken to anyone that has actually tested that, but this is the folk tale that has been years.
But you've split the pit. And you so split does the pit, white embryo actually resemble
the,
a utensil?
The white embryo is inside the seed.
And that is the story from Jean Brine. She's the author of The Perfectly Persimmon Cookbook. That was a conversation from 2012. It is that time of year, so if you find a very ripe persimmon, check the seed. Who knows? Maybe it'll be true. We have posted a link to finding the book. It's at capradio.org/insight. Enjoy your cooking and eating of persimmons. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Tomorrow at this time, you will hear NPR's special coverage of the House Judiciary Committee's public impeachment hearing. But even though you're hearing the coverage, we will be recording a new episode of Insight, and that will be available online by podcast and in our rebroadcast at 7 p.m. So again, that's Insight for today. Thanks for joining us.
From Sacramento State, this is Capital Public Radio, 90.9 KXJZ FM and HD Sacramento, 91.3 KUOP FM and HD Stockton Modesto, 90.5 KKTO Tahoe City Reno, and 88.1 KQNC Quincy, streaming at capradio.org. We get support from the Mattress Recycling Council's Bye Bye Mattress program. Since 2016, the council has worked with CalRecycle and California lawmakers to help divert 160 million pounds of material from the state's landfills. ByeByeMattress.com. Insight with Beth Ruyak is available online at capradio.org and anywhere you get your podcasts. Support for the podcast comes from University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law's Public Policy Programs.
The author Lily Hardy Hammond famously wrote, "You don't pay love back, you pay it forward." It's the driving philosophy of Giving Tuesday. It's also a founding principle of public radio. Hi, this is Tanya Mosley from NPR's Here and Now. Supporting public radio doesn't just mean supporting the news you depend on. It also means supporting the news this community depends on. So, pay it forward. Give to public radio now.
Thanks so much for listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Chris Bruno, Director of Marketing, along with Sally Schilling, our podcast director, and we're here right now to ask for your support financially.
Did you notice anything missing from Insight just now? Shouting, bickering, hyperbole, fear-mongering? Turn to us for journalism that doesn't have that fluff. You know Beth is going to give you that news, that little holiday flavor, arm you with the information you need to know to make sure you don't get scammed this holiday. The goal is to arm you with the facts. If you're invested in the way Cap Radio approaches the news, donate now in support of that.
Yeah, and that investment goes a long way. You can do something extra with your donation at Cap Radio.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. You can opt to have a portion of your gift go to a local food bank.
Hmm.
We'll match your zip code with a food bank in your area, and so you can make a big difference for Cap Radio and your community today with a donation and an opt-in to your local food bank. We're proud to be able to offer this. It's very important to us on Giving Tuesday, a big day of giving for us. Imagine the impact that we can have together just for donating to Cap Radio right now.
I like that, a two-in-one, you know, like you want to give to the less fortunate, because you're able to, but also you can keep giving Cap Radio to your whole community if you step up right now. You've been thinking about it, we know you have, and contribute online or by phone, whichever is easiest for you right now. It's time to make that donation. Call the number 1-800-800-5867, 1-800-800-5867. 5867, or you're at your computer right now, just hop on capradio.org.
Yeah, and it's also easy on your mobile phone. Easily go to capradio.org, make a simple donation. You can now take part in today's international campaign, Giving Tuesday. It's a global movement that inspires and empowers individuals to make a lasting impact in their communities through charitable donations. You can support Cap Radio and your community with a gift to us by donating today. It's easy to be a part of Giving Tuesday by calling 800-800-5867. 1-800-800-5867. You can go to capradio.org, or you can go to Facebook and donate now. It's so important for us to get these donations to help support our programming. Please do it now.
We are so appreciative of your contribution. Everything counts. So you're thinking, oh, I don't know. I would just be throwing $10 a month at the station. That makes a huge difference for us.
We're able to
produce original content that we know you're looking for. For example, our Tahoe Land podcast host, Ezra David Romero, our environmental reporter, is giving you the in-depth stories about what's changing in Tahoe because of climate change, because of tourism impacts, how snow is changing. We just got a bunch of snow. How is this place that we love to visit evolving? You can find it now on Apple Podcasts or capradio.org/podcast. That kind of information, that original storytelling, comes to you because of you. So think about how you can contribute right now.
Exactly. And whether or not it's original content like Tahoe Land, whether or not it's a daily talk show like Insight that we produce, or whether or not we're giving and airing the impeachment hearings from NPR, all of that programming is very, very important, and it's supported directly by you. We understand as a public service the importance of this, and that's why we're limiting our fund drive to make sure that the impeachment hearings are aired for our listeners, because we understand the importance to our community. This is part of our public service mission and something that we're doing for you. Right now is the time to donate. Please support us right now.
Right. What Chris is saying is we're going to take a break from asking for money and fundraising for our station tomorrow to give you that of the moment information. So donate today, because tomorrow we're not going to be asking you. We're just going to be giving you what you need to hear. Depend on us for that coverage with depth and intelligence. And don't forget that we're here because of you. Call 1-800-800-5867, 1-800-800-5867, or give online at capradio.org. We know you're on your computer right now anyways, at work. Maybe you're even on Facebook. We go to the Cap Radio page. You can contribute right there and see how much has already been donated. See that number go up because of you. Call 1-800-800-5867, 1-800-800-5867, or go online to capradio.org.
Yes, your donations are so important to us and ensuring that our programming stays alive, that we're able to produce original content, we're able to give you the NPR impeachment hearings that you have told us are important to you and we understand is part of our community service that we provide in air. You can donate right now. It's very easy. Just call 800-800-5867, 1-800-800-5867. If you're on a desktop, laptop, mobile device, anything that you're on, you can go to capradio.org. You can go to Facebook. It is so easy to give a little bit that goes a long way today.